Good day.
Hello and welcome. welcome to episode 64 of the Generic Foiling Podcast, one of the now very many podcasts about foiling that are available in the world.
We'll come on to that. We're number
by
one.
By far the best. Hope everyone's okay. Liam and I are just coming off the back of a couple of really good sessions. And I feel a little bit sun-kissed as well, actually. Whether that's just the wind or not, I don't know.
I've definitely been a little bit sunburnt at the weekend.
So there is I mean, bearing in mind, it's still struggling to get above 10 degrees in the UK, but we have had this big orange ball in the sky for at least 5 minutes of a session. Liam got hailed on. I didn't get hailed on. And then we've had a session today where I think I actually had a better session than you, which is saying something.
I saw some of your best riding I've ever seen today. I think we have both progressed from wiggling to turning. I'm going to outright say it.
Oh yeah.
There's very little wiggling happening nowadays, and it's either turning or crashing. Yeah.
And I think I've got Jeremy to thank for just tipping me over the edge. And although the traffic light, it was the traffic light system that's done it. Although I definitely understood the concept that he was explaining to me already. He put it to me like a parent would teach a child how to take its first shits. He made it very simple and very easy to understand for an idiot.
I was thinking about it whilst we were on the water today, Freddie, and I was looking over to you whilst I was riding upwind, and I was like, come on, stay in the brown zone. That's the only zone that we've got available today. It's all brown, whether you're at the top of the wave, middle of the wave, or the bottom of the wave. It's easterlies again today, and therefore brown.
Yeah. Which was a shame after we've just had a session each separately at our favourite secret spot in Cornwall that's actually getting really busy now. So both of us have been down to Damus. When did you go? Friday. You had a quote-unquote work trip down to the local establishment of Cornwall and decided to pop in. And then I went and met up with fellow Wanglords Rich and Chris on Saturday.
How was the coaching? Did you get any coaching done? Because Chris had Poseidon coaching clinic weekend, didn't he?
No. Not really, no. I'm trying to think how it actually went down. We got there. So his coaching, he's putting the feathers out there or whatever the terminology is to see what people are interested in. I think it's just too cold at the minute still. There's so many people not really getting out of the house yet. So I think he's got a lot more interest with the stuff later on in the season. We'll get him back on and talk about it, which would be an interesting one. So there is coaching available down in Cornwall, and he's paired up with a couple of the hotels locally, some of the glitz and glam hotels as well, or campsites for a cheaper option, I believe. And it did. It lined up perfectly his weekend for Damer, because it was northwesterly and it was blowing its ass off. It was windy. This poor 4.3 of mine is getting some real use. But it was nice being in blue water.
I mean, you say your 4.3 is, you know, your poor 4.3. All you need to do, Freddie, is you need to take your 4.3 and you need to dangle it in front of your old 3.6 that suffered some severe consequences and go, you behave yourself or this is what I'll do to you, all right? For anyone that doesn't know, Freddie had a bit of an incident a few months ago. Go back to previous. Well, I'm sure you've listened to all the episodes by now and you've heard the story. But it.
I think I will do what now. Now it's maybe died off how pissed off my colleague Tom was with me for destroying it. I might put the video up I took of it at some point. But I'm still a bit nervous about
Speaking
it.
Speaking of Damer.
Well, I'll have a new one. I'll have a new one soon.
Speaking
go on,
of Damer,
go on.
Something I said to Freddie today, which I wanted to share with our wider audience. I rode at Damer on Friday in conditions that I've never ridden there before, which was bang on high tide, and the wind was relatively, had a good amount of west in it. So for those that don't know the area, the implication of that is Damer's a large estuary and then a little bay that gets tucked in round the corner. So depending on what the wind direction is like, depends on whether you're actually riding within this little bay or whether you're riding more in the river mouth. And there's different sort of waves and spots that work throughout. But in being able to ride super close into the beach meant two things. One, the water down there is already like super clean, super clear, really blue. And on this day, there was only a very small swell rolling in, and it was only the groundswell that was wrapping around the corner because the land upwind was protecting the water surface from any wind swell. And secondly, because I was right into the beach, there was zero tide, which for us here in the UK is quite unusual unless you're riding on a lake inland. My God. Was it a treat to ride in effectively stationary water that was like clear and free of silt? And it got me thinking about what Jezza was saying last week about there being just like silt in the water and that affecting the feeling. Because the combination of clean water and no tide, my foil felt the best it's ever felt to just like blast around at speed. It was incredible.
I think if nothing else, it's just not having another chunk of water pushing your foil from a different direction whilst you're on a wave doing certain things.
Yeah,
on
it just
a wave.
Makes it consistent, you know, and predictable, doesn't it? And it was an absolute blessing. I was like this, and like I said to you, what's weird is I'm not one, I was lucky enough in the past decade to have sort of lived abroad and traveled quite a lot, and it's been a very long time, even like since COVID really, I haven't been bothered about doing a trip abroad and a water sport specific trip because we get a good amount of sessions here really on average. Whereas, yeah, riding in some really nice conditions like that had me in the mood to go away and have a dedicated water sports trip for a few weeks and do nothing but ride and chill. Not that we've got any plans.
Just something clean. No, but just something clean. Clean waves, I think, made the difference. Demo, our day was, it was hard work for quite a lot of it. But there was like this glimmery 30 minutes where the wind kind of backed off a little bit and then the wing became a little bit more manageable. You know, I wasn't being yanked off the water all the time, and the waves just seemed to clean up. And it did. It made such a massive difference. You could suddenly just relax just that little bit more, and you could think a little bit more about what you were doing on the wave, not just which bit of chop is going to knock me off this time. Yeah, it was lovely. And then, yeah, back
today's
to the
conditions
brown water
was,
today.
It was back to full-on spring tides, bumps coming from three different directions and a lot of current. But, as you know, I love a learning point and love to share them. And
what was your learning point today?
The conversation.
Follow me for once, because I got the better waves today.
That was unrelated to the waves, wasn't it? I wasn't having my mojo. But it brings me on to the point. At the beginning of the session, we were deciding what gear to take. And in my mind, I was thinking with the way that the wind and the waves was, I was either going to take a 3.5 wing and the bigger foil, the 950 skate, or take like a 5 meter wing and the 750 skate that I'm still borrowing from Rich. And I didn't think I'd have enough power to take the small foil and the small wing because it was wind with current to get away from the beach. And I didn't think that the waves were actually going to be that big out the back. How wrong I was. You, on the other hand, because you had that 4.3, you made the choice to take the smaller of your foil options. And funnily enough, you had a good session. I had a bad session. And it absolutely cemented in my mind that I will be buying either a 650 or a 750 skate. Because as soon as you're in, you know, swell that has some power to it, in particularly in this case where it's bumpy and tidal and washy, just the smaller foil you can get, the better. And we've had some good conditions these last month, and I'm convinced that once you're in the waves, the smaller the foil you can get away with riding, the better.
Which, as we get better with the traffic light system, only becomes more and more beneficial. I took a light bulb went off in my head the other day. I proned the Spitfire 840. And to me, that's like a reasonably small foil. And I'm proning, and, you know, it was reasonably chunky conditions, but it's still proning conditions. It's not overly massive. I hit the top speed and got bucked off it trying to turn, which I hadn't really envisioned or been able to see at all before. They're still fairly big foils. It's amazing when you do get in the right section of the wave, bearing in mind I'm never in there for very long, the power you can generate is huge. So you can see why everyone's dropping down. You know, it is happening. I'm continually selling smaller and smaller foils now. Whereas back, you know, you look two years ago, I mean, we've talked about it, haven't we? 1,000 square centimetres now is considered pretty big, whereas 2 years ago, that was huge.
So to recap the learning points, I think they were try harder, be better, and you've tried harder and become better.
It does help having a couple of good sessions back to back. And we've always talked about this because we never get that consistency.
Which this month, to be fair, we've had more, not as many as you'd necessarily want because we're all addicts, but we've had a good number of sessions and the progression has been quite impressive.
Well, it saves you having that first 30 minutes, isn't it? Of how do I do this?
Well, that was the issue I had today for two reasons. One,
that was hard
because we've had such good conditions, and I've had that Skate 750 from Rich. That's what I've been using back to back, and I've probably had maybe 6-7 sessions foiling in waves on that. And then this weekend just gone, I actually went out for a kite. So today was the first session back in waves on that 950 in bloody ages, and the first hour was a shocker. And sure enough, I got used to it again. Realized how aggressive I could be, and in the end it was kind of coming together, but like you say, it was getting used to it again because it's either a different setup or a period of time gone by. So yeah,
let's get into some journalism, Liam. Let's get into it.
Do you want the journalism first, or the quick fire news?
Oh god, I don't quick fire news, right? What we got on the news
room 101, there's a new entry I want to put. Actually, it's related. I'm going to sneak something in before one of our listeners today. Answer me this. There was a lot of white water today, and there's often a lot of white water.
Yeah, you kept taking me into it. Why are you taking me into it?
Let's keep our marital disputes outside of the podcast. My point was that white water was particularly gassy today. Do you know what I mean? Like white water, you have the white water in front of the wave that's crumbling along, and then it leaves that area of bubbling water behind it. I found today was particularly gassy and quite hard to ride back over. When I was trying to ride upwind out through the waves, through the white water, I was just sinking off the back of them. And I don't know whether I'm imagining it, but either way, it's hard enough dealing with white water. I want to put the gassy, bubbly section behind the white water into room 101. How'd you feel about that?
Fine. Nobody likes white water. It's a ball ache. It's incredible how cash deals with it.
You can't say no one likes it. That's one of these fucking spunky social media terms of the moment. Oh, hitting the, what do they call it? The something ball, the foam ball, mate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, that little bit of footage I had, I was doing a little bounce off the white water.
Anyway, sorry to...
Yeah, but that's different, isn't it? That's trying to ride in the white water. That's not trying to ride through it. It just fucking slows you down, which is so...
So, the room 101 item sent in by the guest, and whilst I explain, maybe you could look them up and give them a shout-out, because I can't remember.
Well, I've got it. It's right here. It's Dajo, Darcy of all trades, room 101, effing Instagram foiling circle... Sorry, story/real circle jerk posting. I don't want to see your story shared, then have it reshared by someone, then you resharing them, resharing it. Now, I agree with this because from two standpoints, I deal with 5 Instagram accounts for work with different brands, and most of my social media accounting is basically just sharing what other people send. And I never understand... If they've put a video up and then I share it from the brand's point of view, why would they share that I've shared their share? What's the point? It's stupid.
I can see two reasons, and I'm on the fence about this because I don't like it from a personal perspective, but I can see how from the sort of influencer social media thing, it has some purpose. One, I guess it resets the clock on the story, doesn't it? Because if you put something out there, it's a bit of a dick move to put the same thing out again. Whereas if someone else shares it and then you share that again, then it resets your 24 hours of your content being in people's stories.
I don't think you can share someone else's share of your thing. They can share. I don't mind someone sharing it. But you should not share someone's share.
I agree.
Of your share.
It's inception, isn't it?
Is everyone keeping up? Is everyone keeping up with this?
I think that the motivation behind it is clearly to try and validate your thing, isn't it? It's like, look at other people giving me kudos. I'm drawing your attention even further that my thing is share-worthy. But ultimately, I agree with you. You can Someone else can share your share. You can't share a share of your share.
The trouble I have is I really want to make people aware of how ridiculous I consider it, but I can't do it. So the way to make it look ridiculous is to share that share or that I've shared of their share. And just to keep the train going.
You know how on Instagram, when you share a story, it like crops it by 20%. By the time you've shared it on five rounds, surely the original video or image is like 10% of your phone screen.
Exactly. And I'm not sure the morons that are sharing the share of the share of the share are actually understanding that I'm doing it to be ironic. Because I think they're still enjoying, you know, oh my God, this guy's sharing. Just... Yeah, so I agree with Darcy of All Trades. And I love the term circle jerk. So the more we talk about circle jerking in
By all means, people start sending us offences of the circle jerk. And now for more relevant foiling news from your favourite foiling news provider. Tom Earl has landed in Australia. I was worried that he forgot to take his bunny when he left Cornwall. I was worried, yeah. But he seems to be surviving.
You really should have. What that photo he put up on. I tell you what, when Christina's not around to take good shots of him, he is not good with a camera. Just stop taking selfies, Tom, because you need to brush your hair, man. At least give yourself 30 seconds after you wake up before you take a fucking photo.
I did message him because, you know, we are notorious secret spot spoilers. And he bloody goes out to Oz, and then within 24 hours, he's tagging their secret spots. And I told him, I was like, mate, you can't be doing that. He's putting Byron Bay on the bloody stories. Do you know how busy it's going to be with the conditions being so good there?
Yeah.
It's not on.
He's out there for a while, though, which has been cool. So it's going to be interesting to see what sort of footage comes out of that. I'm going to share the hell out of his footage.
Do you think he's going to share the share?
Yeah, I think he would. I think he's a bit like that. He loves that.
For anyone that doesn't know, we do know Tom, which is why we get to tease maybe a little bit harder than you perceive that we should. I'm actually really genuinely looking forward to seeing the content that comes out of that trip and also knowing that he's on new gear. Has that actually been announced yet without doing a spoiler because we don't want to edit? No, okay. So
no, all we know is he's left uniform.
That's all we know.
So we don't know anything else. But he's out in Oz for like 5 weeks with the Amos Shapes guys. So I'm really looking forward to... I think they've got like the whole team out there. So it's going to be really cool.
What will he have bolted onto the bottom of that lovely Amos Shapes board? We shall have to see. But I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with it. Know. I think it's going to be quite a step. More news.
All right, next news item.
I have made good progress. This is news and serious journalism. So I have started making good progress with my downwind board. I did some work on that this weekend. And I've had a couple of questions from people about basically the price of building your own board and what it realistically costs and depending on what gear you're going to have and stuff like that. Now, I think some people listening to this might be interested or super interested, and I think some people listening to this won't give a monkey's. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to attempt to make a mini documentary about the production of said board to answer some questions.
I do think there needs to be a separate thing because
yes.
I don't give a shit about this. And yet I can see that there's a lot of people in the comments and you're spending a lot of time on the Instagram answering questions. And again, I just don't care. So then maybe needs to be a separate.
So what I propose is anyone that's interested in board building and particular aspects of it, I'm going to try and draw a bit of a balance between not going into so much detail that you've got an hour of my ramblings to watch on a video and it get a bit boring, but answer all the questions. So if you've got questions about board building, do send them in, and I'm basically going to start documenting from now my board build process and kind of answering a few things that I think would be common along the way. So that's coming. But that leads me on to the serious journalism with Ken Adgate. So he's been one of our most popular guests. I think he's top five now, even though that only went up like a month ago. Yeah, people are absolutely loving Ken, and quite rightly so. He's a super nice guy with a lot of knowledge. And there's two things I want to bring up. He's kindly shared his thoughts on a couple of concepts that we brushed on in the episode and some that are completely new. So I have a voice recording for you here, Freddie, that you have not yet heard. So I play for you for the first time. Let's hope this actually works.
Hey, what up, Liam? Hey, I wanted to give you a review on the Ginsu board that I finished for. So it works extremely well. And it works even better if the plate mast mount is closer to the Ginsu tail. The farther away it gets from the Ginsu tail, the more you could start to feel the plate mount again. So if you could position your Ginsu where it basically needs to be, where your mast would be right behind it, I think it works extremely well. So I'm not sure if it's worth it. I don't ride a whole lot of tracked boards, so I don't know if it's worth the extra weight and time basically reinforcing it, but it definitely does have a purpose if you want to try it. And I didn't feel a whole lot of difference as far as like nose to tail stability in the water. It felt pretty balanced, even though you took a pretty good section of the rear out of the board. So also want to tell you another great episode with Jeremy. Man, he's awesome to watch. I was able to ride with him in Hood River, and his size, as far as his body size and him be able to rip around like that is insane. So it's pretty cool. I'll give you guys another good reason to go to Hood with that downwind board. So hopefully you get time to laminate it and bring it with you. I'm sure worst case you could borrow somebody's setup there, but it'd be nice to have your own setup for sure.
So, few things, background for you before you jump in. Ginsu, obviously, KT Foiling introduced that for the listeners. Most of you have seen it. It's a very aggressive cut out of the tail of the board on the bottom, basically creating a shelf so that where the mast plate bolts onto the board is actually recessed slightly on the base compared to the rest of the board. And I asked him a bit more detail about this when talking about the benefits. And he was in that audio, he's specifically referring to touchdown and riding performance. So in terms of getting going, there was no great benefit in terms of efficiency gain or in fact loss to get the foil going in the first place and take off. There wasn't much notice there in terms of hiding the wash of the mast plate, the thicker built-up section, or in fact creating drag, having another like stepped hull. But he's specifically referring to touchdowns. He said that it made a significant, well, as you heard, a significant positive difference to not increase the drag of the mast plate. So that's nice to hear that concept validated by somebody with such experience.
Firstly, your brain runs a lot faster than mine. So when you feed me 2 minutes of Ken's chat, you need to just not talk about more stuff at the end of it, because I've already forgotten what happened at the start. I'm processing it. So the Ginsu thing is quite interesting. Maybe it hasn't taken off from... Is he talking about it from a wing point of view or a downwind board point of view?
I guess all of it. It's just the positive effect of it in terms of when you touch down, you know, the board hull shapes are relatively efficient. And when you come to touch down, they don't produce too much drag. And the idea is that a mast plate being like 90 millimeters wide and 160 milliliters long, and actually quite thick, aren't they? Like that top of that mast section is quite thick, and it's just a horrible square. He's basically, the Ginsu concept is supposed to hide that and prevent that from making any contact with the water during a touchdown.
Yeah, I can see that obviously being accurate. I mean, I'm not going to bloody argue with the Godfather himself, but yeah, I can see it makes sense.
Like,
it's interesting having watched that design transfer quite a lot into the likes of the downwinding setups. So even, I think, is it the F1 board as well on their downwind board? They've got that little step to get rid of the bottom of the base plate to give it less drag for better takeoff in that instance. So it looks like a less aggressive version of the Ginsu concept. It still confuses me that when it's so aggressive, when it's like an inch or two deep on the wing boards, it's still so aggressive. But I can see it. I can definitely see it. And I guess, like you say, it's a touchdown thing. It's not a takeoff thing. So when you're going from a high speed, it's maintaining the speed because it's reducing the drag of catching the top of the mast like it would do or wouldn't have the effect when you were taken off from a slow speed gearing up.
No, that's exactly it.
That's, you know.
And I think it's...
No, hang on. I'm processing. Yeah. Okay, carry on.
I think that it's interesting in other conversations I've had with him. So when he refers to, is it worth the time and reinforcement, most people's criticism of the KT Ginsu wing board is the weight of it. And I've talked about this with Ken because it has to be heavily reinforced because generally composites don't particularly like super sharp edges, like having 90 degree edges, or at least when I say they don't like them, because you've got a resin reinforced fiber, when you put fibers round a 90 degree corner, it's just not very good at transferring load. That's what it's not great for. And also it's quite difficult from a laminating perspective, like you're kind of asking to introduce errors or what they call bridging, which is another topic altogether. So you have to reinforce them more, which potentially you don't have to do as much with a downwind board, because I think most people would admit, you know, most people downwinding are strapless. They're kind of, yes, they're turning, but they're not cash on a wave in Cape Verde, probably stressing the hell out of those track mounts, you know. So maybe the using it in the downwind shape, which Ken seems to be more favorable towards, is as a result of the fact that it's generally a lesser stressed board, and therefore you don't have to do as much reinforcement to compensate, and therefore you're not adding to the weight as much, so the advantages start to outweigh that disadvantage, perhaps.
The thing that pops to mind to me relates back to even your board design and getting tracks in the right positions. So he's talking about the closer towards the step, the closer in the tracks towards the front of the board, the better it is at reducing drag.
Which makes sense. It's closer to the shield.
Which makes sense, completely makes sense. But it just gives you, especially from a home board builder's point of view, yet more complexity to get the track position and your foot strap position right.
Yeah, totally.
Because you want to make sure that you're as far forward as you can be realistically, which is going to depend on your brand of foils that you're using. And as you found with your 48 litre little jobby, which you like a lot, but you're not too sure whether you got the track position right, which is a shame now because you're at this position where the bloody thing's done.
Correct.
So from a home board building point of view, yeah, that's just going to add a lot more complexity. I am so intrigued as to how you get how like, okay, you've got the board shape, but then trying to suss out where the foil sits compared to where your foot straps are. Because now I'm still doing it with the skipper wing of mine, I'm very much in foot straps in the front position now. That's another point that's probably touched on. I rode a strapless board the other day and it took me a minute to get to grips with things again. So I've quite enjoyed being in front straps. But trying to get the ideal position on my base plate, on my mass plate, is still taking some tinkering. It's just a complex thing to get around. It definitely adds another level of complexity having the foot strap option, which I agree, when you drop down to those smaller boards, you're 48, you wouldn't really want to be using strapless.
Well, I think two comments on that. Number one, that is a worry of us amateurs, basically, and you know, the I'm going to include pretty much all of the non-industry listeners amongst us, like Ken knows exactly where to put a foil box and where to put the strap inserts that will accommodate, you know, no rider, a set of strap inserts can allow for what, like 4 inches of movement front and back. And then a track box can allow for some movement forward and back. But even without a track box, you have to understand that he's making all of his boards for Mike's lab. And he knows a heavier rider needs to have the tuttle box installation a certain amount of distance further forward or back. So like for people like that, there is no question where the balance points need to be to accommodate all the people. You as the rider will still have to figure out where the numpties that need to go, oh, well, do I use that hole or that hole? But he knows how to design it to give you the option that you will want. through.
It's difficult because you can't just Google it. No,
you have to try it out and find your preference. Never... They know what the appropriate range is, where to balance your front and foot pressure roughly, but everyone has their own preference slightly. Then the other point altogether, which is I kind of touched on there, this is what makes me laugh, is that whole concept seems to be to reduce negative effects of having a mast plate. And yes, obviously mast plates give you freedom to move the foil back and forward, which means that one board will work with multiple foils fine. Is the solution to all this not to just use a bloody tuttle box once you know? It's a better connection to the board. It's a stiffer connection. There's no drag. Easier installation. Like, ultimately, if I had the choice, if I knew what foils I was going to be using forevermore, as all of the mics...
It's too specific. It's never going to happen from a brand building's point of view. It might work for someone building their own stuff, but then again, you're either going to build yourself another mast that's got a tuttle box, or you're going to use a tuttle box connection because you might still be on the alu, but realistically you're not. You're going to want a carbon version of it. It's not going to work from a brand's point of view.
I agree with you that it's not going to work without adjustability, but I disagree that there isn't an alternate solution. The mast plate and track thing to me seems awfully primitive. And in the same way that like sprocket and chain systems have tensioners, so you'll have like a thread and a screw which applies pressure on a chain to tension something, or even spring tensioners or whatever, I don't see why you couldn't have some sort of tuttle arrangement which also has like, whether it's spacers or tensioners, which allows a little bit of movement forward or backwards, and thereby you've eliminated all that drag on the bottom. You don't need that Ginsu concept. You got a nice streamlined installation. It might well be stiffer because inherently it ends up connected top skin and bottom skin of the board better. Like, I'm sure that there are other mast connection systems that we will see in the next 5 years.
The difficulty is doing it, but making it available for a interchangeable brand.
And making it affordable.
Because until you get... Yep. But making it cross-compatible with lots of different brands is a very difficult thing.
Well, this is where somebody like a powerhouse like Duotone comes along and goes, right, you know, we're doing this for the industry, we're patenting in this, everyone can use it, but there's a little bit of commission towards us or something, you know. Or, yeah, maybe it's such a good system that it drags people away, I don't know. But watch
all right,
this space.
That's that point. Yeah, that's that point.
Jezza, I totally agree. It's amazing to watch Jezza when he was talking about him and the size, and I totally agree.
Good news.
Another bit of... Shall I save the next bit of Ken board design for next time, or do you want one more?
Yeah, no, I'm done with that. I can't take any more.
I've got some stuff to talk to everybody about to do with tail rocker pumping and porpoising, but we'll save it till Freddy's.
Yeah, not today. Not today.
So foiling news, Freddy, why do you need to drink so much water? That's what's on the script.
I am. It sounds ridiculous, and you've already laughed at me, and I've already been laughed at by plenty of people. And I'm going to start this off by saying I am a relatively fit bloke.
I mean, you ran the Grizzly.
I ran the Grizzly. Well, I walked a lot of it, but I ran most of it. I'm a relatively fit bloke. I've kite surfed for years. You know, I do all these disciplines and I go out for a reasonable amount of time on the water. Not until winging came along have I come off the water and had to guzzle minimum a litre of water post session. I'm not a heavy water drinker, and this is more just I want to know if I'm the only one that does this at all. But you know, I don't need too much water when I run. I don't need too much water when I cycle. I don't get off the water craving water when I kite or surf or anything like that. But coming out of the water winging, I need to absolutely, it's like the first thing I need to do is destroy a litre of water, to the point where I've drunk so much water, I know it's sloshing around inside my stomach, I'm still not satisfied, it feels like I need electrolytes, or it feels like I need an energy drink or something. Can somebody tell me what in God's name is going on that's different with winging, And it's not just the brand water at Exmouth that's making me shit myself or anything silly like that. It's literally every single session I have, I'm parched at the end of it. I need sugar. I need something. It's obviously exhausting me more somehow, but it doesn't feel like it does. I don't understand it. And it's not something I can dwell on any more than what I've just said, but I'm just curious to know if anybody else gets that and if we have any nutritionists that listen, or sports scientists, although technically I'm a sports scientist, I think, from my degree, but I still don't know, who can tell me what in God's name is going
on. Does Freddie have chronic kidney failure, or are his wetsuits making him sweat? It's going to be one of those two things.
What is it? Is it just an exertion level?
I think it's because Yeti's marketing is so good, and you own a Yeti, one of those big fancy like 1.5-litre Yeti water bottles, and I reckon they've laced the lining of that with some sort of cocaine to keep you addicted to the Yeti product range.
But only when I've been winging. Only when I've been winging.
All right, that's big.
Maybe prone if it's a big session. Anyway, there you go. I just reach out if anybody knows. Otherwise, ignore me. Whatever. Next on the agenda.
Other foiling news. In my haste to get to Bantham for a pre-work session a couple of weeks ago, I got my first ever in nearly 15 years of driving speeding ticket because of the Devon and Cornwall Constabulary. I was wondering whether it was payback and that I got targeted for us giggling about that policeman welcoming me out of the water after my session. And I reckon they've been following me around and they've gone, we know, we've looked at his WhatsApp. He's checked in with Rich to see what the conditions are like at Bantham tomorrow. He's going to be on the A38 at 7:30 tomorrow morning. And we're going to snap a picture.
That's what's ridiculous about it, isn't it? Why? What are they doing at 7:30 in the morning? It's not even rush hour at that point. And who's speeding at 7:30 in the morning? Well, obviously you are, but...
I mean, I'm glad that I saw them and... And obviously didn't change my speed at all, but applied the brakes.
Yeah, let's not incriminate yourself.
I was doing 71 miles an hour.
There's a new podcast on the horizon.
There is.
Are we pissed off about it?
We're not. We say go and listen to them. Nah. They're probably going to be really good. Dylan, shout out to Dylan and Kite Puerto Rico. He's actually been mentioned in this podcast a couple of times because Rich and I were riding with him a lot in Portugal last summer. At the North dealer meeting thing. He's got a really successful water sports school and shop in Puerto Rico. And him and his buddy have done a trial episode. Well, is it a trial episode? Is it the first one? I don't know. But it's called X-Foils Podcast. And this was quite like close to me. I've probably told a few people, I don't really listen to many foiling podcasts. But as soon as he dropped this one, I did. Because when I met him in Portugal, the podcast was one of the first things that he asked me about it. And Freddie and I were fairly early days doing it back then. And he was like making such a big deal out of the start of it. And how did we start and all the rest of it? And I was like, well, you don't start anything until you begin. And we just did. And I said to him, like then and there, when we were there, I remember having a couple of the mics with me. And even then I was like, look, if you want, we can sit down and record something now. Like that's how little the barrier to entry is. Let's get some DJI mics, put them on, and I'll ask you a bunch of questions and hear about your story. And if it's interesting, people will like it. And if it's not, they won't. So it's interesting that it's taken him a few months to find the time, but I know he's busy with his shop and school. Here's what's interesting to me about this, Freddie. We're probably the worst riders of all of the podcast creators because I was about to say that he's a really good rider, but then the reality is most people that do foiling podcasts are actually really good riders. But he's a ripper, not only foiling, he's a ripper downwinding, proning, towing, all the foiling disciplines. He's also an OG kiter. He's also a very good freestyler. And he's got a big water sports discipline behind him. The other reason I think it's going to be interesting is we've had the Progression podcast, which, as I understand it, started out independent and then sort of ended up either sponsored or having his own sort of collab deals with brands at some point. And I know that quite a lot of people online on forums sort of called him out and basically said, look, it was good until, you know, now he's just trying to sell me stuff all the time. You've got us who we are aggressively independent. And then you've got the...
I like that. That's a good terminology.
Aggressively independent, like saying that. The things that shouldn't be said. And then you've got the likes of, you know, Foil Drive have got their own podcast, and like Duotone have got their own podcast, which generally doesn't get the listenership because it doesn't have that, I don't know how to say it, other than sort of media authenticity. Like, we do this for fun, and I think people resonate with the fact that we do this for fun and interest, whereas brands putting shit out, well, they're not making anything unless they're trying to sell something. Dylan runs his own shop. The first one is just a chat with his mate. I'm really curious to see how he navigates the I'm a person putting out media into the foiling space, whether or not he ever tries to sell stuff through it, whether he doesn't. You know, people have said you're a distributor for brands, but I tend to shoot you down when you talk about it. So that's the bit I'm really interested in.
Well, we wish you luck, Dylan. Yeah.
Maybe he'll could be my new co-host. Fucking don't start your own one. Let's get rid of you and get him on. I got on with him really well. Dylan, message me.
Great. Well, on that bombshell.
It's time to end. I've got a phone call to make.
Bugger. Oh, I was just thinking all positive about foiling again, and then that's popped up again.
Nah, there's no cool replacement. They're a totally different style. What made me giggle is that they were talking about they've already got more nicer gear than us. He's bought some really nice, like, really nice directional mics, and I could see in their little YouTube video that they made. They did episode number one, Freddie. The whole thing is fully well produced video. It's all on YouTube. I could see he had a little mixer, something that we've been researching to buy only now. He's already got one of those.
It's sickening, isn't it? Isn't it sickening?
The audio is good, and they were making jokes about being able to play like little media things over the top of the podcast, like I do with our jingle and with Ken. And I was like, Christ, that took us ages to figure out. And then in doing so, it reminded me of our first episodes. Our idea for our intro music was going to be cracking a can of beer and then pouring it into a glass. And we tried that and everybody complained and said it sounded like we're urinating, which I thought I'd just try and see if I could play now.
And we're off.
So that was episode 3. And in doing so and listening back to our old episodes, I was like, Christ, this audio is terrible. Who are these Muppets? So we've made some progress.
Well, we did know at the time, didn't we? And I liked how the listeners were all telling us, oh, you know, the audio is not very good. We know. we're trying. What do you expect us to do? Got day jobs. Don't know anything about technology.
Apparently Dylan does.
So there you go. Well, yeah, seemingly.
So, yeah.
All right. What else? Is there anything? Nothing? What we got? Some wins coming up?
Yes, we've got, don't forget, the Kite Foil European Championships has just happened, the racing in preparation for the Olympics, although it's kind of cool to see how the British athletes are comparing against mostly the French, to be honest, as we're expecting in both the Olympics. The Europeans was hotly contested by most of the French riders. This one, it caught my eye because I thought that this was going to be the one that decides whether or not Conor Bainbridge gets in, because he hasn't yet qualified the UK for the Olympics in the men's fleet, as far as I understand. He came 5th in this event, unfortunately missed out on the final race, which decides the final podium with 4 riders. He ended up in 5th place because he was 2nd place in the semi-final and he didn't quite get through, which is annoying. But it does.
But Coach Stevie says that the next event is the last chance saloon.
Yes.
That's the one. So that is what we're waiting on now. Come on, Connor. Get it done.
Was that April?
Ellie's already in. Yeah, sometime in April, which is awfully close to the games, really, but I suppose it's just kite racing, isn't it? They do it every week.
I think Ellie was the strongest of the UK females, only by 1 place, I think. I think she came 4th or 5th, which is good. You know, they're challenging for the podium. I think they're in a good position given that the games is coming up, and hopefully next episode. So Freddie refers to Stevie Morrison. That is one of the GB coaches, Exmouth local, and we are hoping to have him on to sort of dive into the kite Olympics, preparation for foiling in the Olympics. He's got a
bit of insider knowledge, hopefully.
Yeah, and he's got quite a lot of insider knowledge. He does commentary on SailGP and stuff, so he's around Armstrong a lot. Have you seen? I don't know whether you saw Armstrong or bloody infiltrating SailGP and doing free demos and riding and all that stuff.
Good God!
So it'd be good to probe him to see what he knows about Armstrong taking over the world in the sailing world.
Still.
So yeah, he's hope.
I think that'll be a good one.
Hopefully we're going to have him as one of our next guests. I'm excited for that one. So if you've got any questions related to that, send them in. Sorry, Freddie. I feel like it's a bit of a monologue. This episode is sponsored and brought to you by us, Liam and Freddie of the Generic Foiling Podcast. And our T-shirt empire has gone out with a bang. We haven't yet seen photos from people other than my brother. Shout out to my brother. So if you are one of the recipients of the first batch that successfully went out all over the world, we expect to see donning photographs, please. And if you...
We got a good one from Rich today, which I think any photo that gets put in that Wang Lords... I was going to say it should be fair use to be able to plaster everywhere, but there's probably stuff that gets put in that group that should never see in the light of day. But Rich did just send us a photo of him in his Wang Lords t-shirt. If anyone needs more or wants some, it's not too late. We're going to get some printed up. We've still got some screen prints ready to go. So we're just going to get like a few of each color of each size, just to have in stock. So they'll still be good. Eventually, hopefully we'll get them on the website.
There'll be new designs coming. Yep. My smear campaign t-shirt idea is in the works. So you'll have that to look forward to for the diehard GFP fans.
And maybe not Speedos, but something summer thongs. Related, maybe. We shall see. Maybe some thongs. We'll see. That will probably reduce our female content from nothing to negative. Less than nothing.
Reported as offensive.
Easter's coming up. We got Easter. We got some wind as well. I am probably going to spend my time building outdoor furniture all weekend. You might get on the water. The boats, you're prepping the boats?
Yeah, the Mastercraft. I had the covers off, drying it out. Need to go fill it with gas soon. I need to sort out the trailer tow lighting board before we can tow it. I think a couple of the lights are gone, so I need to sort that out. Go put some gas in it, start it up. This is an awful outro. Right,
this is,
I'm just thinking this off is, the this top is horrible. Of my head. Whoa. There's a race in the UK, an event that we must announce. I'm sure that either somebody in Poole or Cornwall or something. Yes.
Pete Stevens is hosting the King of the Roads wing race for the BKSA this year. If you bear with my waffling for just a moment, I shall tell you what date it is. It's in May. It was a really fun event last year, despite not getting any wind, because it's a British wind event. 18th and 19th of May. It was a ton of fun. Actually, we went there at the weekend. Pete owns the cafe at Myler Yacht Harbory thing. And they do a hell of a breakfast, like a mean breakfast in the morning. So we wandered around there. It's well worth coming down to that. There was a really good turnout last year. If there is wind, it'll be sick. It'll be so good. If it's not, it was a hell of a good party. Sponsored by cider. Pete needs to grease the wheels with a bit more free cider, I reckon, this year. But otherwise, it was a hell of a party. So head down to that one. The UKWA guys are doing some racing at the moment. Actually, just this weekend gone. I haven't heard anything from it yet. They were in Weymouth, but they've actually got like 12 events this year that are incorporating wing foil racing as well. We don't know anything about windsurfing or UKWA or anything about those. I would like to get down there from a work standpoint and potentially... Well, not podcast standpoint, but it'd be good to hear a little bit more. So if anyone did actually go to that, please let us know how it was, because there was wind. In fact, there was a shed load of wind, so it'd be interesting. Leon was there as well, actually. So it should be... We'll chase that up. That'll be in the news for next week's episode.
I would like to have a go at wind foiling. If anybody on the South Coast has got a beginner wind foiling set up, for reference, I have windsurfed twice and I got planing. And I reckon on a nice, easy setup, I'd like to have a go at wind foiling. So if anyone listens.
We can arrange that. We just need to go to Portland, probably, is a problem.
That's fine. I will travel. One final recommendation. I've run out of ideas, but one final recommendation from me, and I know this is close to your heart. Episode 50, the big one, of the Raglan Surf Report podcast really made me giggle. If any of you don't know who that is, Google Raglan Surf Report. Very funny, Kiwi, satirical surf media output, kind of taking the mick out of the surfing industry, but actually an absolute ripper. Luke Sederman and him and his mate do a podcast, much like ours, very unrelated to surfing. And the 50th episode was absolutely cracking. So that's my recommendation I'll leave you with until our next episode.
Who says you don't learn stuff with the Generic Foiling podcast, eh?
Broaden.
You come here for the news.
Broaden your horizons.
Come here for your journalism. This
your
is
t-shirts.
It. All right. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye.
See you soon. Oh,